Welcome to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. How are we doing tonight? We'll start with Maya. How are you tonight, Maya?
I'm doing great. Can't complain. I'm very much on a Hawkeye high still. So, yeah.
It was good, wasn't it? It was really good.
Yeah, very good.
Anthony, you are 2 weeks into having a new child in your house. Have you slept?
My wife is a saint. She lets me sleep at night and then she takes care of her all night, and then I take care of the big one during the day.
All right. And has he adjusted to life with a little sister yet?
He is doing better than he was last week. Every day is a step in the right direction.
Oh, good. And then the Funko King himself, Kevin, welcome back to Earth's Mightiest Weirdos. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me back. I don't have a newborn child, but I do feel very tired tonight after the whole No Way Home ticket shenanigans that happened last night. So
when did you finally get to go to sleep?
Oh god. We had a Brian, do you mind if we discuss?
By all means, go ahead.
So as I'm sure all of you knew, Spider-Man No Way Home tickets went on sale at 12:01 Eastern last night, and myself, Maya, Brian, a couple other of our friends, we all were on a chat we were ready for this. We knew it was going to be bad, but you know, we were ready for this. So people were, Maya, you got through luckily. And myself and friend of the show, Ryan, were trying to get our tickets for our show here in New York. And we had the tickets at like 11:50, and then AMC like booted us out. And so we just kept trying for another 3 hours. And we ended at like right before 3 a.m. Eastern. And then we all went our separate ways. And then I was in bed and I just had a bad feeling in my head. And I was just like, let me give it one more try. And so from my phone in bed, I got back into the app. I got into the queue. It finally let me see the seat map. I tried picking some seats. They weren't good. I got back to the seat map. I found some other set of seats. And the only time it ever let me get past the select the number of adults or children or whatever. And then it got to the payment area and I was freaking out because I was like, don't crash, don't crash, don't crash. And luckily it took my payment and we were good. But we have a big group of us trying to go see in New York, and we wanted six tickets. I got five together and one right behind us. So I was like, that's fine. I don't care. We're in the theater that we want to see it in. So but that whole thing was insane. Brian, I know you were very, you knew this was going to happen.
I hate when the general public knows when tickets are going to go on sale. The same thing happened with Endgame. The same thing happened with The Rise of Skywalker. Like, I like when Marvel sends out a tweet, says Eternals tickets now on sale, because then it doesn't happen. Now, obviously Spider-Man No Way Home is a whole different animal. So, I mean, I get it. Honestly, I think most people woke up at 7 in the morning, had no problem getting tickets, and they don't really care. But Maya was losing her mind. I got two on Thursday, two showings on Friday. I was done before midnight last night, but I was a lucky, lucky soul. So, Anthony, you were able to land Thursday at 3 p.m. as well, correct?
She's listening in now. Jalen, we both just woke up early this morning. I got it at 6:30 before I took Connor to school. And, you know, luckily there's like three theaters within 5 miles of me. So,
well, let us know if you scored your tickets. We are having our first official United We Fan movie day at 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon, December 16th. Mark and I are going to our very first movie together since we started our podcast, which is a little ridiculous that it took this long, but it's going to be fun. So we'll make sure to get some Instagram fodder, if nothing else. So, well, he's here and he wants to talk about Hawkeye. So we've got to get into it because he needs to go to bed. We are going to get into the world according to Jax. How's it going?
Good.
Did you have a good day today?
Yeah, I did.
Good. We got Spider-Man tickets. You're excited to see Spider-Man?
Yes.
Yes. We're going Friday night at 6 o'clock, right? The 17th?
Yeah.
Okay. Who's going to be the one person you're looking forward to seeing most in that movie?
The black suit Spider-Man.
The black suit Spider-Man. Who knows who that is, right?
Yeah.
All right. Well, what did you think of Hawkeye?
I really liked it.
Who was your favorite character? The tracksuit mafia, bro.
I feel like the funniest character so far has been the guy who got the Ronin suit at the medieval place.
Uh huh.
That was Grills. The funniest guy so far, yeah. But I'm not sure who's my favorite.
You're all about LARPing Hawkeye. Hawkeye being a LARP.
Yeah. Cling, cling,
clink,
cling, bro, clink.
Okay. What did you think of Kate Bishop?
I liked what she did in the show.
How about that opening scene when you go back to New York of 2012?
That was pretty cool.
Did you figure that out before it happened?
No.
Okay. And last question, what did you think of the song on Broadway? And we have Kevin here to talk about our Broadway expertise tonight.
I've listened to it a lot lately because of the playlist we have, and I've grown into it, I guess.
So you didn't care for it, but now you've listened to it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, have a good day. Thanks.
Thank you.
Make sure you close the door on your way out this time. All right.
Did you get him a new? Did you get him a new clothes hanger, Brian?
Yeah, so if you didn't, Hawkeye made quite the impression on him. We took family pictures. We were taking him on Thanksgiving before dinner. And 20 minutes before we left the house, he took a plastic bow or a plastic hanger, used it as a bow, snapped on him, scratched his eyeball. So we have family pictures with our 9-year-old son wearing dentist chair sunglasses because he couldn't see with his eyes open if he didn't wear them. So that was fun. But yeah, so we'll get into it, but Mark talked about it on This Diz Live prior to as well, but we want to talk all things Mr. Tom Holland. Kevin, we got an article from Fandango today, and Amy Pascal was wanting to get out there with this information because she legitimately interrupted the interviewer on trying to set the record straight. My mind, my heart is at ease right now. Mark says he apologizes for the thievery. I did go off on him a little bit for stealing MCU headlines for his show, but that is what it is. But Kevin, she wants to get out there and say, Tom Holland, the Marvel Studios Sony relationship, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I think this was a great thing to wake up to after the whole ticket things happened last night, just knowing that, oh, we're definitely getting more Marvel Studios Sony relationships with Tom Holland. I mean, everybody has been speaking in terms of No Way Home being the final film of the Homecoming trilogy. I think Amy Pascal even said that in the interview. She called it like the Homecoming trilogy. So it sounds like they're going to start a new trilogy of films. So everyone was like, oh, this is going to be the end of Tom Holland, this and that. But a lot of people I saw in the discussion kept forgetting that when Sony made their deal back in 2019 with Disney, that it was for No Way Home plus an additional Marvel Studios film that to be determined later. For,
yeah, similar to Endgame or Infinity War.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So we were always going to get at least one Tom Holland once more. Is that Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness? Is it Avengers 5, Avengers 4.5, whatever is coming down the road, whatever that is. So everybody was like, oh, this is Tom Holland's last film. Like that wasn't the case, but I am glad to know that it sounds like they're going to keep the relationship. They're either have offered him a new contract or he's already signed his new contract. And hopefully that does include him to voice in freshman year, the animated series. That would be really great if they could loop him in. But if not, if the actor who voiced Peter in the What If episode comes back, I'd be fine with that too, because he did a good job, a passable job. But I think everybody knows supposed to be Tom Holland's story from hopefully Tom Holland will be able to voice it.
I was very nervous, and we talked about it many times on this show, that the way the post-credit scene of Venom ended up, that it was setting up an exit of Tom Holland from the multiverse. Did anybody see the Andy Serkis commentary on that post-credit scene from Venom?
No.
Andy Serkis, Venom, Let There Be Carnage is now out on digital. There's a commentary track that comes with it. And during this post-credit scene, Andy Serkis talked about how the gateway is open, but Venom hasn't stepped through yet. So a lot of people are putting together that they're coming through with Doctor Strange on the Statue of Liberty and all the purple in the sky, but he can't stop them. So I think we're going to obviously get a little explanation as to what that means. But I think we're going to have a lot of quote unquote crossover of, is Venom in the MCU? Is it not? Morbius comes out in January. We don't know. But if I have to put up with that to keep, especially Tom Holland, but just the character of Spider-Man in the MCU, I'm willing to take that. Maya, I'm assuming you're interested in another Tom Holland trilogy as well.
Absolutely. And I'm curious though, like if they were to extend the relationship, are we just going to see like a sharing between Spider-Man, or can there be instances where Venom or Morbius can like team up with some MCU characters without Spider-Man being there? I'm just curious, but I'm really happy because I think we share the same sentiment of being nervous that it was going to, you know, end up with Tom getting swept away to Sony and we not like see him again in MCU.
Yeah. I mean, Anthony, I think you're with me here as a big Jared Leto fan. I think you would like to see Morbius make his appearance in the MCU, but I don't necessarily want Morbius itself being full blown in the MCU.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm excited to see how this ties in with everything, just because you've got Michael Keaton's Vulture in Morbius, and then you've got the Spider-Man like graffiti on the wall, which isn't even a Spider-Man that we've seen. It's from the video game, the images from the video game. So I don't think they want us to know or even speculate what's going on. But I'm excited about the new 3-year deal, because what I'm hoping might happen is that Tom Holland's going to get a little bit older, and then you can bring somebody in to play Miles, who would be a little younger, and then Peter would seem more like a role model to him. Because if you had somebody come in, he'd have to be like 13 years old. And then I can't see Tom Holland being a role model to anybody with as young as they have Peter right now. But I'm excited to see where this all goes, and I guess we just got to sit back and enjoy the ride.
It set my heart at ease. Again, Amy Pascal was just saying Marvel. She never said Kevin Feige, Marvel Studios, nothing like that. But again, Kevin pointed out to me, just don't be too cynical. So I have a tendency to do that, especially when it comes to my beloved Spider-Man. Well, let's get into talking about Hawkeye. We were discussing Hawkeye very early on, and Maya said, I want in on the Hawkeye episodes, at least one of them. So Maya, where did you stand with the character of Clint Barton, and where do you stand with the character of Clint Barton now?
I felt like I was always in the minority by saying I really liked Clint. I was a big fan of the Clint Family Farm and Age of Ultron. And I just really liked his character. And I just felt like, I don't want to say he was the glue, but I mean, I just really respected his character. All his action scenes are so like fun and interesting to me. So I had a very like high view. I know a lot of people put him on the bottom of their Avengers list. And that's not the
case. Okay, so let's do it. Maya, with six Avengers, I'm betting he comes in sixth.
No, I would say Black Widow comes in sixth. Sorry, Sarah, if you're listening. I mean, it's tough.
They're all great.
He's probably fifth, but still, all of them are really great, but I definitely wouldn't put him at the bottom.
Okay.
So, and after the series, I mean, at first I was a little nervous because one of the like influencers, like Marvel commentators that I kind of follow, he kind of described it as like Disney Channel original. And I was like a little nervous for that, but I mean, it's definitely not the case. It was really well done. The quality was great. And it didn't really, even though it's like more of like a smaller scale story, I felt like there was so much groundwork being laid, and I really enjoyed it.
Good. I'm glad. In an effort to kind of replicate, thank you to Alex and Robert for joining us last week, getting ready for this show. I want to have kind of a more of a free flowing conversation like we did last week. So I want to kind of go character by character, and I want to start with the main character of this show. And Anthony, that main character is Hayley Steinfeld's Kate Bishop.
Fantastic. I absolutely love her. The few things that I've seen her in, it doesn't seem like she is acting. It just seems so natural for her and everything that she's been in. And, you know, she's not overacting. She's not underacting. And like in this, I feel like she's just playing herself. And it just seems like such a natural fit. And I believe I read somewhere that she didn't even audition for this, that they wanted her They asked her. She said, sure, I'll do it. And then here we are. So that's huge.
We assume Marvel spent a pretty penny to get her out of her non-compete clause in with her original Apple TV Plus show, Dickinson, because she had a non-compete with all streaming services. I would assume Marvel probably kind of put their money where their mouth is. And I think even two episodes in that it's paid off. It's exactly what they were going for. Kevin, what did you make of Kate Bishop, and particularly that opening scene of the young Kate Bishop? And I mean, we all knew as massive MCU fans, 2012, New York City, we know what's coming. Kevin, what did you make of that opening scene?
Yeah, when the episodes came out last week, I waited until later in the day to watch it because I was at home for the holidays, and my mom watches the MCU stuff, and so I was waiting to watch with her, and so I was trying to stay off social media, and I know a lot of you were commenting, and I was trying not to avoid what you guys were saying, but I did see an article that said like something about like how they pulled off that amazing opening scene, or I think I briefly saw that Brian had said, wow, that opening was great. So I knew something with the opening was going to be really great. And then as soon as it started and you got sort of Alan Silvestri Avengers-esque music and you saw 2012, I was like, okay, we're going back in time. And it was, I really liked seeing you quickly learn things about her mother and father with the conversations that they're having, and are planting some seeds that I feel for later in the two episodes of what might be happening and going on between the two. But then, yeah, once you know that, oh, at some point here, the Chitauri are coming out of the sky, the Avengers are going to start battling. And it was really great once we got to that moment and she was staring out and saw Avengers Tower, and you saw Hawkeye in the corner doing his stuff. And I could have sworn when they did the close-up of the Chitauri and then showing the shot from behind the Chitauri into Kate's building, that I feel like, I haven't gone back and looked, but I feel like that was like in Avengers. And I'm like, did they literally just like,
I looked.
Okay. So maybe it's the Mandela effect or whatever that is, where you think something's there. And I was like, I literally like, if they like pick that one frame and then they're like, oh, they're putting a CGI character here, and that's Kate. Like that just blew my mind if they did that. But, yeah, that was amazing how they incorporated that. And that like, that's her inspiration to him becoming her favorite Avenger, and then taking up archery in addition to all the other amazing skills that she does, such as the martial arts and the fencing and all that stuff. So yeah, that was a really great opening. We're going to get us into the series.
Go ahead, Anthony.
I did love how we saw a different view of that iconic shot of Hawkeye just falling off the building backwards with like, he's like, all right, well, I'm going to go out this way. But I did think it was kind of funny how that Chitauri just like honed in on her and was like, I'm gonna go kill this little girl.
Fresh meat.
And I also like to, we see like the scene where like the little boy's looking at Steve, the little boy's looking at Tony, and so like that perspective of like someone was looking up to Hawkeye, I appreciated that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, applaud to Marvel. They got it right with another child actor. This little girl did a really good job. I think she was absolutely fantastic in that opening scene. The fact that they could introduce you to this character, put you in the MCU immediately, and then tell the next 12 years of her life simply by silhouettes and a theme song. And again, not Alan Silvestri's Avengers music. This was Christoph Beck stuff. I didn't know Christoph Beck had this project either. So his music was good to hear. But the fact that you assume when we go through this opening title sequence, we're then going to check in with the title character of Hawkeye. But the title character, as we go throughout the show is called Hawkeye. It is Kate Bishop's show. Like Jeremy Renner and Clint Barton are obviously going to be a massive part of it, but Hawkeye is Kate Bishop as much as it is Jeremy Renner by the time this is all said and done. I'm really, really excited about it. We check in, she destroys the bell tower, but just everything about Kate Bishop, and she's just so antsy when she takes Clint back to her apartment and she's just like, Hawkeye's in my apartment, brings down her book to get it signed.
Can you sign this?
She's just so antsy. And then Clint says he's going to do the Natasha, intentionally get himself captured, and Kate can't stay out of it. They're asking for her and she falls through the roof. Just everything about Hailee Steinfeld was perfect in this episode. Maya, anything else on Kate Bishop that you would like to make sure we touch on?
I would say I was a little hesitant. I wasn't the biggest Haley Steinfeld fan beforehand. I really mostly was a singer. I like some of her music, but I wasn't the biggest fan of Bumblebee. I know everyone was really into, well, she was in Bumblebee, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. She was. Okay. So that was like my only data point I have of her. I wasn't the biggest fan of that movie. I
in that film.
Beat me to it.
But I'm really happy. Oh yeah, Pitch Perfect. I'm really happy with what we got from her this go around.
She's so great. So Mark says, I love David Aja's artwork. Mm-hmm. Kevin, have you heard about this?
Yeah. So the title sequence, at least in the first episode, is very much reminiscent of David Aja's work from the comics.
He's extremely upset.
Yeah. Well, I'm reading through. This is the Saga collection of Hawkeye with Matt Fraction and David Aja. So like this logo here is obviously the typeface that they're using in the series, and then this artwork style is like what we see in that first episode. But yeah, I did realize that. Yeah, somebody had mentioned something about creator compensations, and then he responded and was saying something like, yeah, I haven't received any monetary compensation or whatever. So that is interesting. He does get a special thanks at the end of both episodes. However, Matt Fraction, the writer, is a consulting producer, so I'm assuming he's in that title, he's getting some sort of compensation. But hopefully, I know when Ed Brubaker was asked about Falcon Winter Soldier, he also had similar comments about how Marvel Studios goes to use these characters in all of their projects, but the original creators in the comics aren't, like, they're getting some compensation, yeah, but it's not as good as it probably should be when Marvel is raking in all these millions with these movies and streaming shows, you know. So that's about the gist of it, I think.
I'm gonna go out there.
Feeling hot, hot, hot.
I've worked for that company. The very first Disney paid $4 billion to purchase that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's their property now. Like, I understand you do want to give him credit. In my personal opinion, I'm not sure he's entitled to compensation. Like, it's Marvel's property. He created it for Marvel. Like, I understand, yeah. But what you create for the company then becomes the company's.
I mean, it's a weird situation with like work for hire and all that such, but I mean, especially in this series where literally the typeface, the artwork is like being used in the opening credits, and like the producers have Trin Tran, who's the executive Marvel Studios parliament member on this one, has like, they've come out and said like, oh, the Matt Fraction run, which is beyond the words, and it's the words and the pictures are like, mm-hmm. It's the major influence for the series. Like, if you were to tell somebody, pick a series, like, what would I read? Like, you would read that one because that's the one that's most synonymous with it. Like, the fact that maybe the writer is getting compensated more versus the artist, it's a weird balancing act for sure. But like, I definitely feel that he should be compensated fairly for the work that is being translated onto the screen.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, it's muddied waters. But I wanted to talk about it. It's part of the intrigue or whatever you want to say about this show. But Anthony, we'll switch gears now over to the character of Clint Barton. We meet him wearing a hearing aid. And when they explain why he has the hearing aid, that I thought was absolutely hilarious.
Too much to tell. I can't tell.
Yeah. And then we just get quick, like him jumping through glass and explosions. It was great. But we cut to him wearing a hearing aid, and he's not really adjusting to life without Natasha that well.
Yeah. I think, like Maya said, that, you know, he almost seems like he could be the glue of, not necessarily the glue of the Avengers team, but I mean, he's definitely the heart. You know, he's the one guy who, other than, you know, Natasha, who's been at least trained to kick ass, and you know, Tony's in his giant metal suit, but other than that, you know, he's not a super soldier. He doesn't have gamma radio. He's a guy out there with a sleeve tattoo getting sunburnt on his mohawk. And you know, he definitely puts it all out there. I mean, he's on the front lines with all these heavy hitters. So he's out there for a different reason. And the fact that, you know, you ground him with a family and three kids, you know, it's a really cool thing to see. You know, the Barton family farm was, I think, how do I want to phrase it? It was a shock to all to see it. You know, even the Avengers were like, wait, you have a family here? So to see them all and just to see like a normal everyday life of just a normal guy who's a hero, you know, it's interesting to see it, you know, especially, you know, when he goes out to dinner with his kids and they're like, oh, you know, it's on us. You saved our city. And he's like, I don't, you know, I did, but I did, you know, he doesn't know. He doesn't want to just graciously take it, but he's, you know, it's fun to see the human aspect behind, you know, a guy like Clint, who for most has been on, you know, number six for a while. So it's fun. I'm excited to see where it goes. Like you said, this is definitely going to be a Kate Bishop show, but I'm excited to see the steps that we see Clint pass this on to Kate.
Shout out to my co-host, Marky Mark over at United We Fan. We were discussing the show and he was like, how weird is it that Clint can get all his meals paid for and then Sam Wilson helps save the world and nobody buys him dinner? And I was like, well, this is New York, man. Like, you could save the world and they're like grateful, but if you save the city of New York, it's far more important than saving the rest of the world. So I feel like, and that's why the song on Broadway is called Save the City. Like, it's all focused on New York, because right, Kevin, it's all about New York. It doesn't, the rest of the world doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're in New York, like, yeah, it's like, it's New York and then everything else. So like, if you save New York, you're in the good books of New York for a while. So,
but yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Like I honestly expected the song to kind of take a shot at Hawkeye, kind of like everybody else does. And it didn't. Like, Hawkeye, there's no greater shot than you. Like, all that, it worked really well. Him saying that Ant-Man wasn't there. Like, we'll talk about that because I want to rip some people for going crazy into the multiverse of Ant-Man and whatever. But Maya, you said he's been undervalued. And one more thing that Anthony said, talking about the Barton family farm. Did I love it originally? No. Do I love the story that came out of it, of Clint having this family and what it turned into in Avengers Endgame and what it's going to portray in this show? I love the family dynamic that Clint has. So I am all about the family farm now.
And but especially with his wife, that they don't hide, you know, he's not hiding anything from
her. Yeah.
You know, I'm gonna talk about
that in a bit.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So Maya, but you said he's been underrated for a long time. Did he meet your expectations in these first two episodes?
Absolutely. And then we just get like more time with this family. Cause I like, and we'll probably talk about family dynamics, like you said later, but it's like his family makes him stronger. A lot of times the family is always like the burden, like any other like superhero or any type of show, like the family is like that, I don't know, the crippling factor in some way, but I liked how it explored how he gets so much from his family. And yeah, just him as a father. And just like, man, that, are we going to be talking about the Rogers musical right now? Or are we going to talk about it later?
We'll come back to it.
Okay. We'll come back to it. I'll just,
yeah. Maya, I wanted to get your female perspective on something, because usually when we're talking, having to balance a life with kids and everything else, we're doing that with a female character.
Mm-hmm.
Have you given much thought to the fact that we're doing this with a male character now, a father instead of a mother?
Well, I feel like with Marvel, it's always the dad. It's easier for the dad to leave. And I actually, it's been like one of, not a criticism I have of Marvel, but Tony, Scott, we see so many dads that are like put on this pedestal, but it's never like a female hero with a child. It's always the dad, because it's more acceptable for them to walk away from their family for missions and then, you know, kind of be away. So I feel like what we get with Hawkeye, it's not necessarily different from traditional Marvel, but I think kind of just seeing Kate and her mom's dynamic is refreshing. But I honestly don't think it's, you know, that different, because we've seen a lot of male heroes with kids.
Fair enough. I wouldn't count on Kate's mom being a hero.
Well, yeah, of course. Right. Well, like, at least a hero and their mother. But yeah,
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I like that they brought the Russo girl back. I apologize, I do not know her first name, but she's
Ava.
Ava, yeah, Joe Ava Russo's daughter, and she was cast in Endgame. I think she was great, great to bring back in this show. But Kevin, what did you make of Clint and everything that we got here?
Yeah, I like what Maya was saying, that like the family dynamic and what you just said. I like that we we're seeing more of the kids, like, because in Age of, they were there briefly in Age of Ultron as I don't know if the older son was the same actor in that one or not, but in any ways, the young boy, he was just born, so like we didn't really get them, and then they only briefly appeared in Endgame in the opening, and then like later on and such, you know. So we knew he had his family, we just didn't get to spend time with them. But like the dinner scene with the Nate with doing the eyes with the like the cat or whatever was fun, just to like see like he's quirky or whatever. And then like when they're going in the car, Clint's like, the number one rule, make sure you know where Nate is, and they're like, they can't find him, you know. So like, it just like says so much about like the family and everything, of like what their personalities. And then his speech to Lila when he's like, you've always been the leader of the family and whatever, like you're in charge, like that was great, just to get those little moments and such. And then as for Clint, he's not a guy with superpowers, like he's just like a normal person. Like I thought it was like great at the beginning when he goes to the bathroom, like the guy, this is every guy's like worst nightmare, like this like empty stall urinals, and then the guy literally comes right next to him, like in any instance that's not great. And then like he's just like, can I get a selfie, like famous or not, like poor timing, man, like that's just poor timing. And then, like also, what, you know, so it's just like he's just like a normal person. It's not like he has people running up to him like and fanning over him, like if he was Tony Stark or something. Like he could walk through New York and some people might recognize him, but other people wouldn't, and that's fine with him, you know. So like he may not want all those people recognizing him anyways, but like he can do that, he can just like walk through and he'll be fine.
And everybody that recognizes him is still like, are you Hawkeye? Like,
yeah,
they're not
quite sure. Yeah,
but yeah,
yeah, in the female bathroom, like if you take the stall next to you, whatever, but urinal, like if they're all those ones to choose from, do not pick the one next to me.
Yeah. All I could think of is that the meme of like all the urinals, and then it's Joe Buck, and then whatever, like like whatever main sports star, whether it be the Super Bowl or World Series or whatever, whoever Joe Buck is obsessed with, and that meme of him standing right next to him, that's all I can think of.
I've seen that one with John Madden and Brett Favre. Anthony, you seized on the biggest thing I wanted to talk about with Clint. He's not hiding Ronan. He's not hiding anything from his wife, Laura.
No, nothing. And that's great, because we don't have this, you know, typical TV trope of, oh, he's hiding something. And, oh, is the wife going to find out? Are the kids going to find out? And then just have this dramatic, you know, then they're going to get in an argument. And then the next episode, they're going to, you know, work it out and everything's going to be fine. So I'm glad that they're open. And even when she's like, you know, what are you going to do? And he goes, I think the catch and release, one of Nat's favorites. So
I mean, I don't know why I didn't expect as many Nat call outs, because Clint was like a main character in the Black Widow movie, even though he never showed up. But I mean, Maya, I would assume you were a fan of this open relationship as well.
Yeah, for sure. Same with Anthony. It's just nice to not have those secrets. And then just see her, like, it's very peppery almost, like their dynamic with like Pepper and Tony just being very active in each other's like lives and understanding like what's going on. I liked it.
Kevin, do you think that he regrets his Ronin days?
I mean, I think he definitely is like maybe wishes he didn't do some of it because of maybe some of the repercussions that have come through. And also maybe because I don't think his kids know. His wife does, but I don't think the kids know, because like when they're leaving, like they were, when they see it on the TV, they're like, oh, that's a ninja. They're not like, oh, right, Dad, that was you, you know? So yeah, I feel like he doesn't want it to, now that he has his family back, because his whole purpose of doing that was to deal with the grief of losing the family. But now that he has them back, I think he doesn't want that to come back onto the family and like put them in harm's way and stuff. So.
Well, one of those enemies that he made along the way, and it's Linda Cardellini is the actress that plays Laura.
Scooby-Doo honestly, movie.
When they referred to her, like being like they were all in the city and she wasn't there, I really thought like she wasn't going to be in the show. And then like the next scene, she's on the phone. So I was very happy to see that. I thought they were just using the excuse of we couldn't get the actress, so mom stayed at home or whatever. So I was glad to see her. I wasn't sure. I don't remember her from any of the marketing or promo material.
She was in, I think
yeah, she was in a little bit.
The second, the second like big trailer, I think, because initially it was like, yeah, we were like, oh, it's in New York. And they're like, oh, I'm here with the kids. And so we, I think we, at least I thought, I was like, oh, maybe she's not in it. And then she's in the second one. But I mean, I definitely feel like they got her for like 2 days or something. And like, here's our set with the Barton home. Like we're going to film everything here. And so obviously that's why she's not in New York, but, sorry, continue, Brian.
she was Velma, though. Yeah, Maya's absolutely right. She is Velma. She's great. I really like her. So it was good to have her in the show. I hope she's in it more. Their conversations are really good. But one of those enemies he made as Ronan. What you talking about, bro?
Bro.
Bro.
Tracksuit Mafia. The Tracksuit Mafia are absolutely amazing. Maya, what did you make of the Tracksuit Mafia, other than the way they treat the dog?
Excuse me. So me and Alex Klein have this running joke of, like, the henchmen all, like, shop at the same place, like, in uniform. So we call it, like, henchmen's warehouse, like, men's warehouse. And I'm like, oh, my gosh, I saw this. I'm like, not that they're all wearing a tracksuit. I didn't know it was a thing of the comics. I had no context for it. But, I mean, it is, like, funny. It's, like, it's hard to take them seriously, but I mean, at least it's like a different, it's not an alien or anything. It's just like a dumb human man. But I thought it was funny.
The fact that they're willing to make them the butt of the joke where Kate's like, really? Like tracksuit, that's a little on the nose, don't you think?
Yeah.
Like, it was absolutely too perfect. They didn't go the predictable route because they were saying she wants to see them. You assume they're taking them to Kate's mom. Like at least I did. I assumed she was Kate's mom. And she was not Kate's mom. And we're going to talk about her at the end of the episode. Anthony, bro, what did you make of the Tracksuit Mafia?
Bro, so at first they kind of reminded me of like the typical like, you know, the villains in like a Spider-Man game where it's just a whole bunch of guys in tracksuits and they just continuously keep showing up. But just the back and forth they had at the end of episode two when Clint's like, this place is kind of weird. And then the one guy gets so defensive. He's like, well, it's hard to just find a warehouse that isn't creepy. Like, I don't have a lot of options. He's like, come on, man. Wait, you're my prisoner.
Kevin, do you run into the Tracksuit Mafia on a daily basis in New York City?
No, I don't run into the Tracksuit Mafia. But yeah, it was the second time I was able to rewatch the episodes before the show because the first time I had a little trouble like hearing some things the way I watch or whatever, and I missed this the first time around, and I found this absolutely hysterical when Clint is getting caught and is getting brought into the van. He's and they put the bag over his head. He says, "I can see through the bag," and I was like, "It was absolutely hilarious," and that was absolutely hilarious. Yeah, but these guys are great. I'm glad that they're like they're a threat because they are a gang and like a part of the criminal underworld. So like they are a threat, but they're bringing like levity to it and like the humor and stuff. So I'm really excited to see them continue in the rest of the episodes and just like their dynamics and like the other things that the main guys are just going to like get into and like the jokes they're going to do.
I didn't catch the "I can see through this bag" until like my third time.
And yeah.
It was so good.
I love that the humor's dry too. Not all of it is, you know, they want you to, you know, roll on the floor and laugh. It's just, you know, quick little one-liners of that. Or even when they're walking down, like, it looked like by Times Square almost. I don't know. But she was like, "Oh, that's you." And he's like, "No, that's Katniss Everdeen." And
go ahead, finish it. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say the one little, you know, quip little one-liners of, you know, it's not just a downright joke. It's just something that people would say in real life.
Yeah.
In the situation of just kind of being a smartass about stuff, and it plays so well. It's great.
Yeah, I think I was just gonna say I think one of the best jokes of the two the episodes is when Kate is being the waitress. And she's just like, and Gary comes up, and she's just like, and that's the problem, Gary. Like,
you don't even know my name.
I quit. And then he's coming like, I don't know who you are. And then she just flips it on him. He's like, wait, yeah, don't quit. I need you to work this event. You know, like,
and then gives him the champagne. So his like hands are
that's a great, great joke.
Yeah. that was great. Mark brings it to our attention. We did move on from Clint Barton without talking about Clint Barton, the LARPer. I need the entire footage of that day, because that is how I just simply imagine Jeremy Renner getting put on Punk'd and showing up in like that type of environment, because I feel like that's exactly how that would play out. I thought, man, when he's like, you gotta let me kill you, but then he didn't drink the potion. Like, why didn't he drink the potion? I thought it was absolutely amazing. Maya, have you ever been a LARPer before?
I didn't even know that term until just
hearing role models.
Yeah, role models.
No, I've not seen role models, but I've heard like reenactments, like psych. They would like, there was some like reenactment episodes and stuff, like Civil War reenactments, but nothing like this. I thought it was like kind of a stretch, like really the LARP sticker on the fire truck. I'm like, oh, come on. But they are like, it's so funny, like, I loved it, and I didn't know that this was like a thing. So it was great learning for me.
Dungeons and Dragons on steroids.
Yeah, you need to see Role Models. That movie's fantastic, and it's got our own Ant-Man in it. So
yes, it does. Okay. If any of the four of us have ever LARPed before, it's Kevin.
Nope.
Oh, 100%.
Ooh,
he's definitely done it.
I was really hoping for some first hand.
Nope, no LARPing. But I will say this: this may be a hot take, Brian.
Feeling hot.
I thought the LARP sequences were a bit overplayed. And
get out. Get out. Kick him.
Remove him.
So most of it, like him getting there was fine. And the end part of it with the duel for the, or the whatever it was, that was great. I thought the sequence of him, the slow-mo sequence of him like walking towards the costume, like, I thought the joke just got over. It just got overplayed for me too much. Like it was just like they could have done it like just.
I loved
like
it.
Cut it in half, mm-hmm. And like that. Like to me, it was just overplayed. I was like, okay, we're doing the same joke over and over again. It got stale for me.
No, so, because if you don't slow it down and get that whole circle around him, and he sweats through all of them, and they all fall down, like you don't get that.
But like do that shot and like cut some of it at the beginning and cut some of it. Like I just thought like hit like. The circle, that was great. Sure, that was great. But, like, him doing, like, the two people, it, like, leading up to the circle, it's like, okay, we're just, like, we're playing over. Like, he's laser vision through this. He's an actual trained swords person. So, like, these people with these foam sticks and such are not doing anything, and he's just dismissing them. Okay, like, we're playing through this joke. So,
what are you talking about? What are you talking about, foam, man? I heard it say clink.
Yeah, exactly.
I heard it a lot. A lot of clinks.
I will say, while we're talking about
the helmet, I'm so bummed he didn't wear the helmet.
I thought he was gonna make a Thor joke, honestly. I thought he was more a Fabio joke. But while we are on the LARPing sequence, I did want to mention the person who had the suit, Grills, is actually it's a character from the comic run. It's a totally different character. The name is the same, but Grills in the comics is so in the comic, Clint has bought an apartment building from the Tracksuit Mafia, and Grills is a tenant who gets his name because he's grilling up on the roof all the time. So I thought that was a great way to like, and he's kind of like a good friend of Clint in the comics, or they become friendly, and he's like one of the people that you're like, as you're reading through, you're like, oh, this person might die, and I think something, I haven't gotten that far yet, and they might happen. So in any event, I was glad that the name got brought in, and I hope that he does return, because he was like, I owe you, so maybe he'll incorporate into the future episodes in some way.
And when he says, you can call me Clint, he goes, can I really?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, even at the beginning, when he like signs up for it, they're like, name? He goes, no thanks. Email address?
Email classified.
Just how much he wanted nothing to do with it, and he's like, had to go through the motions, and that was great. That whole scene was fantastic.
Piano Rob is here. Hello, Piano Rob.
What's up, Rob? Thank you
for joining us. All right. Hey, so Kate's mom, we talked briefly on it. Kate's parents, one word answer, Maya, is Kate's dad actually dead? And if he is, did his wife kill him?
I think he's not dead. I'm thinking that she probably killed him.
Well, he can't be dead. She didn't kill him if he's not dead.
Oh, wait, my bad. You're right. Or like...
I think she said she was going downstairs while Kate was getting the checkers. Like, I don't think the Chitauri killed him if he's dead.
Well, and it also could be like maybe trying to cover it up or something, like her being somewhat responsible for the disappearance of her dad. Yeah. I guess that's what I meant.
For the insurance, maybe. If nothing else.
Yeah, yeah, that penthouse definitely has a safe room.
Kevin, is Kate's dad dead?
Dad is not dead. I don't think the mom was. I think the mom is aware of what may have happened, but or what could have happened, but I don't know if she actually know. Like, I didn't take it when she said, "Oh, I have to go downstairs," that it meant she was going with him anywhere. But maybe she was in the room, and there's got to be a hidey hole or some secret penthouse door or something, and like so he totally escaped. As the Chitauri were starting to attack or something, because my feeling is he's involved with whatever is happening with this auction and the Armand and all that stuff. The dad is involved with that in some form, as well as the mom. So we didn't see a body.
Kate's mom is going to play some crazy role. Vera Farmiga is an absolutely talented actress. She's going to do something crazy. Anthony, do you think he's dead?
No, I don't think he is. I can't place what he's been in because I'm an idiot and I'm blanking right now. But that actor has too much of a recognizable face to me. Like, I immediately recognized him, and I feel like you wouldn't get somebody that you could recognize. Yeah, not just some guy walking around like, "Hey, we need you to be in the show for 35 seconds." So I don't think he's dead. I think he's coming back in some form or fashion.
The actress Brian D'Arcy James.
Was it Oceans?
He was Shrek in Shrek the Musical.
Ooh. He was the president in Dark Phoenix, but I can't imagine you would remember that movie.
Anyway, I fell asleep during that part.
What did we make of Inigo Montoya? I mean, the swordsman. Kevin, the swordsman, he's funny. Duquesne, I'm sorry. Yes, yep. Jack Duquesne. He is Armand's nephew, and he's weird, and I actually really like him.
Yeah, he's got a weird energy to him. The whole thing where he was like, "I bought a book about stepfathering and stuff," you know, was like, that was really, really great. But yeah, I mean, he's definitely, I mean, Kate was on to something with the whole fencing thing of trying to get him to show that he actually is better at fencing than he was letting on. So there's definitely parts of it to him, and also the conversation he had with Armand in the at the auction about being like, when he was like, when Armand was like, "I can't stand Eleanor anymore," and he's like, don't worry about her or whatever. Like, so like they all have something going on here, and maybe that's how Eleanor met Jack, through whatever this organization or whatever's happening here, and that's how they became a couple and whatnot. But yeah, I like him. The character he's based on in the comics was actually has trained Clint or whatever, and I think Tony Dalton, who plays him, has said that like they're not really doing that in the series, or at least at the moment they're not, that like Clint doesn't really have a background, but he still has a affinity for swords and that mentorship in a bad way
sort of quality. I think we might find him in over his head. I think he just has a fascination with swords and he doesn't know what he's involved in. Do not believe he killed Armand, even
a little. No, I don't either. No, definitely not.
Maya, what do you make of Jack and his creepy uncle?
Yeah, it's just he feels so out of place with the mustache. It looks like he comes from like a different universe. Like, I don't know what it is. It's like my mom went on a date with a vampire type vibes. Like, he's just so different. And it's almost like it's hard for me to take seriously, but I remember the scene where he was talking to Armand at the auction and he was like, "One day I'm going to inherit it." And this is before I completely went over my head that he was Armand's nephew. But I'm like, oh, is he using the mom for money? But then I guess it can be two ways. It can be talking about her, but also could be talking about him inheriting money from Armand. But I mean, I think he's a really good actor. He does a really great job. But it does feel like with the mustache, his whole vibe, trying to make this thing like, oh, he's definitely the bad guy. But like you said, I think it's more so the mom has more bad intent maybe than him.
I think it's because they want me to think he's the bad guy, which is why I'm convinced he's not the bad guy.
Right.
But I did notice when he was fencing with Kate, he was using his left hand. Like, I was literally waiting for just that entire, I am not left-handed. Like, he is Inigo Montoya to me. So, but Anthony, what did you make of, and side note, I did not know Ronan's sword collapsed into the hilt like that. I thought that sword was really cool.
I didn't know that either.
But it was cool. But Anthony, just the swordsman and his uncle, just everything going on around there. Anything of interest to you? Do you think that he killed Armand?
No, because they laid out all the pieces that he did. So I feel like he definitely didn't. I mean, even down to the Armand the Third butterscotch that he offered her. It's too clear to point right to him. So I'm not buying it. I think there's a lot to be told in this story. So
Mark says, but if we look closer, we see that the donut hole has a hole in the center. So he's going full blown. What's the name? Oh, Knives Out. I couldn't remember the name of the movie. I was going to say James Bond, and I knew that wasn't right. So we'll get to it now. Maya, you wanted to talk about it. Rogers the Musical. How much do we need it in real life?
Maybe not that story. I just thought it was just funny in general. So Broadway, and I'm curious to hear Kevin's thoughts. But I really like, I was cracking up at that Ant-Man part, but I was a little confused too, because Hawkeye's wearing purple and I don't think we've ever seen him in his like comic book type purple uniform. So I was like, where'd they get this from? But, like him. So my dad has hearing aids too. So it's just like funny, like seeing Hawkeye like tune it out. My dad does that all the time. So I just thought that whole scene was just hilarious. Like the Hulk, like, and they're not even like real costumes. It's like green sweatshirts and things like that. So, I mean, I thought that was like one of the best scenes of both episodes for sure.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. Kevin is our resident Broadway expert. We're going to go to Anthony next. Anthony, what did you make of Rogers the Musical?
Considering I just bought tickets today to see Hamilton when it comes to St. Louis in April.
Nice.
I need to see Rogers right after. So it was funny because when the trailer first came out, there was a image of that was, you know, frozen from the trailer, and there was everybody. And on the far left, you could see a guy in, you know, just a red shirt, and he had red and black Jordans, and you're like, who is this guy? Cause you couldn't see a logo, and it had come out right after Shang-Chi. And I was like, okay, well, there's no way it could possibly be Shang-Chi in here. So I never even thought Ant-Man, but no, it looked like it was fun. I mean, I did love how the youngest son came out. I was like, why was everybody singing so much? And then they all bail on it, but they seemed like they pushed it a lot. Cause even when, you know, Kate first shows back up, and she's, you know, walking under the bridge and everything. And then on the left, you see the huge Rogers Musical sign. And then when she's in her aunt's apartment with Clint, and there's the Rogers the Musical commercial on TV, it's like, all right, we've already seen this. So I feel like had we seen that first and then we saw the musical, we'd be like, oh, that's what everybody's talking about. But I don't know. They keep pushing it. And I'm curious if we see anything else from it.
I think it's just trying to be like Hamilton, kind of set itself in New York a little bit, being a little self-absorbed, if nothing else. But Kevin, again, as our resident Broadway guy, did this hit home for you?
This was really interesting. The song itself was, the guys who created it or composed it were the guys who did Hairspray. So like when I knew that, like listening, I was like, okay, I can definitely hear their style in this. And they also did, Mary Poppins Returns on film. They've done a lot of film in Broadway, but on Broadway at least, it's Hairspray is their big one. And yeah, so this is definitely like the end of act one number, like the big dance, like break and whatnot and everything. But I have to say, yeah, and Mark said in the chat that he didn't even leave, make it past intermission, and he left, and you know that's bad theater etiquette. They did South Park the movie, the bigger, longer, uncut, whatever it's called. But Yeah, I mean, as a show, yeah, as Maya pointed out with the costumes, like, they're in, like, they definitely took, like, the more casual creative liberties with the costuming of the of everything, of being more casual and whatnot. And some of the production value, like, you had, like, the flying cardboard thing of the Chitauri or whatever, like, in this day and age, that would have been a projection. It would have been a VR experience. Like, they would have, like, figured out how to, like, get that flying up over for the audience and everything like that. And such, but yeah, as a Broadway, very interesting, very campy for sure. And yeah, if they make any sort of full show out of it, or at least make the full number or something they do at Disney, that'd be really cool.
There was a shawarma call out. I'm good with it.
Yes.
Again, Maya said we hadn't seen the purple. I'm willing to overlook it. It didn't bug me too much. Again, I thought they were honestly going to take a poke at Hawkeye, and he was just going to.
Yeah.
Well, that's not fair or whatever, but I mean, it's a Broadway show I would go to, and I think that's the highest praise I can give it.
Yeah.
Considering you don't do Broadway.
That's exactly right. So.
I was reading about the composers, about the lyrics and everything. It sounds like Kevin Feige was a big fan of theirs. So, like, they were at an award show or something, and he approached them and was like, I want to talk to you. Like, do you want to, like, work on making a musical number? And it sounds like one of them, had no clue about the MCU, but one of their husbands, like, was, like, a big fan, so they, like, hunkered down during, because this was during the pandemic, they, like, hunkered down and watched, like, all of the movie, so that's why you get, like, the lyrics about, like, I can do this all day, because, like, who's gonna know that, like, Cap said that? It's like, but, like, just thinking from an outside world's perspective, like, they're littering the lyrics with, like, all these, like, call-outs of, like, characteristics for each of the characters and stuff, so I thought that was pretty cool.
I'm curious if that was
the whole song is available anywhere you find your music as well. Sorry, Anthony, go ahead.
No, you're good. I am curious to know, like you said, it was during COVID, but I do know at the end toward, well, I guess the middle of episode two, when Clint and Kate are walking towards her and they see in Times Square, there's actually a Beetlejuice ad in the background.
Yeah.
Which, as far from my understanding, and Brian, I think I heard this from Mark on United We Fan, that Beetlejuice is done and it's not coming back.
Beetlejuice, it is coming back now. It had closed right before or because of the pandemic, but all the marketing was still left up for the most part. So, like, because they were filming this in December 2020, so about a year ago. Because I remember when set photos started coming out, I was like, we were in the middle of the pandemic, and it's like, oh darn! I would have found where they were, and I would have tried to go, but I was like, we're in the pandemic, I don't really want to be going out or whatever. But yeah, so, like, all the stuff has still been there, but it's currently not there. And as Mark said, yes, it is coming back later at some point. So that advertising is factually still okay.
All right, cool.
We'll get into our final topic, and the Tracksuit Mafia. Bro, they took them to she who wanted to see them. When I figured out it wasn't Kate's mom, I honestly thought it might have been Yelena Belova because she's trying to find Clint. It wasn't Yelena. It wasn't Kate's mom. It was Alakwa Cox's Maya Lopez, who is Echo, who is the adopted, in the comic books, is the adopted daughter of Kingpin. And Vincent D'Onofrio will not stop on Twitter of talking about this show. Kingpin's coming, in my personal opinion. But, and Kevin, correct me if I'm wrong, but Alex told us last week that she is deaf, correct? And that's why she was feeling the speaker. She was reading his lips. So Maya, Echo looked cool as crap. Like, I would assume you're excited to see where we go with Echo in this next episode.
Absolutely. I say it all the time. It's really great to see a Maya in the MCU. Maybe people will stop mispronouncing my name. I thought that was one of the, and I actually didn't really notice. I was so focused on her face the first time I watched. The second watch, I just saw her, like, it's zooming out and it's like all those speakers behind her and then her having the hand on her speaker. I thought that was such a cool introduction. And it's just so crazy. Like, obviously she seems very serious in the shot, but just like, she's really associated with these idiots. Like, these are the people reporting up to her, the Tracksuit Mafia. So I don't know. I can't help but feel like there may be like a Shigo Draken type like dynamic between her and her peers or the people who work for her. But I thought it was such a cool introduction And I just love this, like the speakers behind her. And I love that we have more representation on like hearing loss, like between Makari, her, and now Clint, who's suffering from losing his hearing. I just thought that's really interesting. That's like, okay, they're not just using it like one character, check a box. Oh, we've already represented like a hard of hearing deaf character. But now you see it in like a lot of different characters. So I really appreciate that. And I'm really excited to see what Maya does in the MCU.
She's going to be awesome. I'm super stoked about it. She's getting her own show, as we know. Anthony, what do you expect from Echo? Were you excited to see her at the end of the episode?
I was, and I'm going to go ahead and file the receipt now. I'm going to go on the same path as you, that we are going to get Kingpin in the show. And I think it's definitely going to be Vincent D'Onofrio. I think it's definitely going to be the Kingpin from Daredevil on Netflix, mainly because not only with Echo being the adopted daughter, but in season 3, the building that they use as Fisk Tower is the same building they used for the fundraiser gala in episode 1.
Oh, shoot.
Really?
The fence on the outside, the building itself. And it's the same building they use for Fisk Tower, and which makes me believe that it still is, and that he is not the one who bought Stark Tower after Clint said Tony sold it a couple years ago. So
Stark Tower needs to be the Baxter building. I will not accept anything else.
So I think Kingpin is gonna show up at some point. And then it's just going to break wide open from there.
Do you think this means they pull in events from Netflix series to stand as canon, is Mark's question? I mean, probably just as much canon as if we're going to say Spider-Man, Spider-Man 2, and Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire are quote unquote canon, even though they take place in a different multiverse. Like these shows reference the quote unquote, the incident. These mm-hmm. could take place within the MCU and just never be referred to. If legend is true, if rumors are to be believed, Charlie Cox could be making his MCU debut in 3 weeks in Spider-Man No Way Home. Daredevil, there's a lot feeling like Daredevil's coming. And if we get Vincent D'Onofrio as Kingpin, that'll put a nail in it for me. Kevin, do you mm-hmm. think we're going to see Kingpin as well? Are you filing said receipt?
Oh, yeah. I definitely think we're going to have Kingpin. I want
to... Anthony did get there first. Anthony, I'll give it to you.
because he's in the order of the show. Yeah, you got to him first. I will say to Anthony's thoughts about the building, it's just a architecturally cool building here in New York, so I wouldn't put much stock in the fact that the Fisk Tower and Daredevil was the same as the holiday party in Hawkeye.
Get your reason out of here. Like,
why are you still here?
No, I do think Avengers Tower was bought by Fisk or a subsidiary or somebody for Fisk from Stark, and it's going to be the Fisk Tower, but it will eventually become the Baxter Building once they rid Fisk of the building.
So you're telling me that in all of New York City, that was just like they only have like 3 cool buildings to film at? I'm not buying it.
Yeah. It also looks
Marvel's too smart with their details to let that go.
Yeah.
No one will notice. It's not like it's Gemma Chan in Eternals and then Gemma Chan in Captain Marvel because she's blue. No. Get out. Mark, kick him.
I think this will be in the at the tower. I don't think the Netflix series are going to run parallel to the MCU, I think. So if any events that happen in the Netflix series are the same in the MCU, it's just going to be like, across the multiverses or whatever, the events just happen to be the same. It's not going to be like, this series is in the proper MCU. That's my thinking on how, because it's going to get too convoluted if they pick and choose things and they're only saying like, so I think things will be similar. I don't think it's going to be directly like if you reference season 2, episode 3 of Daredevil and you saw that event, like that's in canon. I don't think they can do that. I think it's going to make things too confusing.
Well, I think it's going to be the same approach as Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. can pretend to be they live in that universe all along and they can reference the MCU as much as they want, but the MCU is never going to reciprocate the favor.
Right. And that's, so Daredevil could say as much as they want, but now going forward, if Vincent D'Onofrio, Kingpin does show up, Charlie Cox's Daredevil does show up, then we're just like, it'll just be, if the events are the same, we'll just be like, it's a parallel something or other, or it's completely different, either way. Let's see, there was something else I wanted to say, but Anthony rudely interrupted me with my...
Was it about Echo?
Oh, yes, about Echo, yeah, so what... well, Maya was saying, yeah, she's and the actress Alaka Cox is deaf. She's a Native American, and she's also an amputee. So that's like she checks so many representation boxes for a vast amount of people. And I remember Laura Ridloff's husband served as the ALS interpreter on set, or the language interpreter on set for both Eternals and Hawkeye. So that was pretty cool, and little connection that before those two characters hopefully meet at some point.
Don't try to tell me that Eternals is also in this universe, Kevin. Don't even start.
But it, okay.
But it is.
Yeah. So long story short of it. Yeah, I do think Echo is working for Kingpin's purposes and is serving his needs, and he'll show up at some point and we'll see him and where he is residing, either in where the gala was or former Avengers Tower. We'll see who's right, Anthony.
The gala also looks like it could be straight out of Into the Spider-Verse as well, Kingpin's exactly. Tower in there. Exactly. Speaking of Into the Spider-Verse, you can follow her on Instagram, Into the Maya-Verse. Maya, is there anything that you need to plug before we get out of here? Any last words on Hawkeye?
Well, there was one thing I wanted to mention about Echo that I totally forgot. I thought it was also funny how, like, one of the track two guys who, like, said, like, they caught both of them, and then he kept repeating it, like, I know a lot of, like, as if, you know, repeating it was going to let him, like, her hear him or something like that better. Thought that was kind of funny, and she was just like, get out of my face. Another thing is, I really think just an overarching line from the both of these episodes when Kate was talking about branding, I think that's so meta, because like that's so real world too. Like the branding for Hawkeye, I feel like, you know, it's, he's so like, you give him a bow and arrow and that's kind of like what he's known for. So I feel like this series is really gonna brand him and give him more of an identity that he's had previous film. So I really like those two scenes, but I have nothing to plug, but follow me on Instagram.
Follow Maya on Instagram, shop my fashion, a website that starts with an M. Anthony, anything that you need to plug?
Nothing I need to plug. 56 quick things though. One, I loved how when Clint was, you know, captured and he was sitting in the chair, and it was kind of portrayed in the exact same way that Nat was in the Avengers, you know, it kind of pans up behind her. And then that just the parallels of that. Two, I loved how, and I don't know, maybe I'm just reading too much into it, but when she's in the Ronin costume fighting in the like wine cellar, when she like stepped on one of the bottles and it flew up and hit one of the henchmen, it reminded me of when she was eating lunch with her mom and her mom was like, see, I can be cool too. And she like hit the fruit off the thing, so I thought that was kind of cool. And the only other question I have for everybody here is, what do we think the importance of the watch that the Tracksuit Mafia was looking for from Avengers Tower or from the
Avengers compound? It seems to be I just assumed it was Tony's watch and it's just expensive.
I mean, I think it has something to do with Tony, but I feel like, I mean, we saw how in Endgame he had the nanotech and the bracelet or whatever, and the like pulled the arm, so like, but I it's got to be something of Tony's or something of Howard's that Tony held on to.
Tinfoil hat fully on.
Mephisto in that watch.
Stark Tower is Fisk Tower, and there's some secret door that Tony's watch can open.
No. All right.
All right. I don't hate that.
I don't know.
I didn't know, because they never, I mean, and maybe they'll come back to it, but they were like, you know, we need the watch and then everything else is extra. And
they better come back to it.
Or I mean, it was too prominent.
It's in WandaVision. Like, you never told me who the witness was in WandaVision. Yeah. That's the only imperfect thing about that show.
Or it's the scientist that's coming. The
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The aerospace engineer. It's just gonna be that.
Right.
Okay. But no, that was it. That's all I have. I've got nothing to plug. So
Kevin, anything you need to plug? Anything before we get out of here?
Yeah, the only thing I want to say is I just want to know what everybody's thoughts are on and Jalen's favorite character, the bestest boy, Lucky the Pizza Dog. We didn't get a chance to talk about him. He's like gonna be the star of the show.
He took a beating.
He did.
I mean, there's a lot of yelps that we didn't see on screen. I was like, all right, guys, I don't need to hear this four or five times.
Maya, Lucky the Pizza Dog, go.
I absolutely adore him. He's so adorable.
There's Jalen.
And yeah, perfect character.
He's amazing. Well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Alex Klein is going to end our show by saying it is Mephisto for all time.
Always.
Always.